Ni Men Hao, welcome back to another episode of Ignite Your Power, the Kathy Bao Podcast. Today I have such an exciting guest, Todd Sarner. We're going to dive into a topic that so many parents, especially mompreneurs, can relate to: finding balance, peace, and connection in the middle of life's chaos. So Todd is a licensed marriage and family therapist, psychotherapist, and author of the upcoming book, The Calm and Connected Parent, which is coming out in a couple of weeks. So excited. So for over two decades, Todd has helped high-achieving parents transform power struggles and emotional blow-ups into true connection and calm. As the director of transformative parenting and a longtime faculty member of the Neufeld Institute, Todd brings a deeply compassionate, non-judgment approach to parenting, helping families move from just knowing what to do to actually doing it in a way that supports both the child and the parent, which is so amazing, especially for me, since I am a mompreneur and I have a three-year-old. So if you've ever felt pulled in 100 directions, trying to do everything right without losing yourself in the process, this conversation is for you. So Todd is here to remind us that parenting doesn't have to be crazy or feel like survival. It has to be deeper connection, growth, and even peace. So let's welcome Todd to the show.
Hey, Cassie, how are you? I can tell you just have no energy, so we're going to have a hard time. It's going to be boring. So
I know, right? I'm just excited to have you on here and dive a little bit deeper about how to be that calmer, connected parent that we all need to be, right?
It's especially when you have a preschooler. That's a fun age.
It's a fun age? Oh, I don't know if it's fun right now. I feel
it's everything at once. It's like the coolest, greatest. They're so amazing, and it is a lot. So it's everything all at once. Yeah.
Yes, but I remember you saying that you love the three age. So
I love that age. You know, I was mentored by Gordon Neufeld. He wrote a book called Hold On to Your Kids, and he kind of took me under his wing when my son was about one, and really brought me on board as part of his first intern group. And then I did serve on the faculty of his institute for a few years. That's been a long time now, but I remember. My son was three, and I listened to a presentation he gave. It was audio only, and it was in Alberta, Canada. And I was so fascinated because it was like 3.5 hours just about preschoolers. And so I had one. I actually sat there. I'm such a nerd. I sat there, and I hand transcribed the entire 3.5 hour talk, because I just thought it would be a way to like study it and get to know the material, because I knew his material at that point pretty well, but now I had a preschooler. And so it just meant more to me. I'd worked with parents with preschoolers, but so I just sat there by hand and like wrote out this 3.5 hour talk. And then he was going to make it into a training course that he made a DVD about, Making Sense of Preschoolers. And, he and I would talk about it every month for many, many months. I think it's a fascinating age. And for a long time, I used to teach, before COVID, I used to teach preschooler classes in Marin County at these private schools and things that I used to work with. So it's fascinating. He said a joke at the beginning of that I still tell some version of, where he said something about, you know, their brains are such, and there's some important things to understand about the brain of a preschooler. Maybe we'll get into some more. Yeah. But he said, one of the things is they're the most naturally aggressive human beings in all of development. The good news is that we just don't give them weapons, and their arms are short, so they can't take a swing at us too much. But it's really true that they have this like combination of being really frustrated about things and a brain that doesn't tell them that they're not supposed to hit, you know, so they can be kind of aggressive.
Yeah. Notice that she just started being aggressive. Like when she gets frustrated and angry that she can't do something because she's so independent, she's like, I want to do it. And then when she can't do it, she'll kind of like start hitting. She gets so angry.
It's one of the main frustrating things about that age is, on the one hand, they think they can do more than they can and they can't yet. And also adults, like their parents sometimes, start assuming they can do things that they can't do yet. And so everybody gets frustrated. Like parents are like, you should use your words and you should do this. And they can't, right? Like, I don't know about you. I'm not going to pry into your personal life right now, but I don't use my words sometimes when I'm frustrated. I like to try. I'm better maybe than when I was a preschooler, but it's hard when you're an adult to like know what you're feeling sometimes or express it the right way. It's impossible for a child that age because their brain is just not there yet. There's just so many things they can't do, you know?
So how do you find the fine line with navigating like patience with them, but at the same time, directing them in the right direction? Because in my opinion, I'm like, all I can do is regulate myself to be as calm as possible, to be as calm as possible that I can be, right?
You've figured out one of the most important parts is, especially when they're that age, it's really almost all about controlling the environment around them and not thinking that you're going to control their behavior. Because you can't really control their behavior. You can take things away, you can yell, you can do all this stuff. And sometimes it might have a little bit of an effect in the moment, but it really doesn't work. It doesn't feel good, you don't like it, it's not consistent. You'll end up doing the same thing every single day to try to control their behavior. You can't. One of the biggest mindset shifts that I try to make with my clients, especially at the beginning, and especially if they have a little one, you know, like a preschooler, but even older ones, is that the mindset of parenting is not supposed to be what you do to your child to make them stop doing something when they do it, right? That's a totally reactive approach. And so everybody's Googling and now everybody's ChatGPTing and asking Perplexity, like, what do I do when my 3-year-old's having a meltdown and I'm losing my patient and whatever? And what they will give you is what you ask for. They're going to give you a reactive answer. Well, the best thing you can do, Kathy, is you can try to like take a deep breath and maybe go through this. And maybe, you know, spanking's bad, so you should probably give them a timeout. And if you give them a timeout, but that whole like kind of pathway of approach doesn't work. It doesn't work. And sometimes when you have a preschooler, you can get away with it because they're so little. But as time goes on, the biggest mindset shift that I was trying to talk about that you have to make is most of parenting is supposed to be proactive, not reactive. Now, that sounds like a nice, simple thing, like, okay, a good philosophy, but what do I do, right?
Yeah.
We can get into what you do about some stuff. But I am here to tell you, 22 years of parent coaching, working with kids before that in group homes and foster care and adoptive, you know, programs, I'm telling you, if you wait until stuff's hitting the fan, that's not a good approach. When you wait until you're melting down or your kid is, it's not a good approach. The most sustainable approach is understanding that 90% of your parenting is supposed to be what you do proactively to avoid the problems in the first place. And that means I divide my process into 3 parts. The first part is attachment and relationship. That means nothing works if your 3-year-old or whoever, how old your kids are out there in the audience, if they don't feel connected to you right now, if they don't know that you're making sure that you connect before anything else, if they don't think that you love them right now or that you're interested in what they're going through or what their experience is, nothing else you do will work. And so it's important to have little rituals to make sure we get connected again. It's important, especially at that age, that you help them hold on to you when they're not with you, by what we call bridging, and we can talk about that, that you matchmake them with other people they're around. But then in the second phase, it's important that you have good structure and ritual and predictability, especially younger children, but this is true for teenagers, that they know what you do and when you do it, basically, and that you teach them consequences sometimes, that if this happens, this happens. If this happen doesn't happen, this doesn't happen. That's not a punishment. That's just how it is. You didn't eat dinner, you don't get dessert. That's not a punishment. You just didn't eat dinner. And my job is to make sure you have dinner. Does that make sense, Kathy? It's like, I'm just trying to say, we can talk more about specific situations, and maybe it would be helpful if you said, this happened with me and my 3-year-old yesterday, right? And we can figure that out. But most of what I try to offer to people is parenting is about who you are to your child, and it's about creating an environment and a culture around your child that handles most of the mistakes proactively. But then when things are going sideways or they're not going perfectly, the third phase is you should have some strategies and attitudes about how you respond to them. Because if you respond to your kid with yelling or taking things away or punishment, again, it doesn't feel good, but it also isn't effective. Like, just ignore that it doesn't feel good part, you know, which we shouldn't, but ignore that part. It doesn't work. It doesn't work to take things away and leverage and yell and whatever. It just creates a loop in where your kid keeps doing it and you keep yelling and you keep doing that, right? Yeah. So that's a very long answer, but...
No, that's great. It makes so much sense. And the longer and more descriptive, it's so helpful because it puts together the whole picture.
I try to paint the big picture first and then we can zoom in.
Yeah.
But I think it's really important because so much parenting advice is piecemeal, or it's one size fits all, or it's just what to do in 3 steps. Yeah. And that's really satisfying when you're looking for an answer right away, right? It's super great to go to the LLM and ask it, what do I do here? And you get an answer and, oh, it worked that time. Great. But the big picture is really where you need to live. The big picture is where you can actually make change and get out ahead of it. And then we finally tune different things depending on what's going on, you know?
That makes sense. Okay. And I love how you said creating that like safe environment though for them to, and have structure all at the same time. So they know they can feel it. And I feel like I'm doing that in a way. I don't know if it's correct, but I make sure that my daughter is loved. She knows that she is. Well, it's weird because with me, she's a certain way, but with her dad, she's a certain way. With her grandparents.
Well, that's always true. Yeah.
And so what I create for myself with her is that she can be the safest with me, I feel like, because she is all parts of her personality, like to the extreme. So I know that's being comfortable. That's being like her, you know, showing her whole entire self and not holding back, which is great. But at the same time, I have to deal with the extremities of all of that. Right?
Oh, totally, totally, totally. And one of the things that I try to talk to people about is like specific needs that they have, because the number one thing is exactly what you're doing. Make her feel safe, make her feel loved. And as a general principle, yes, you cannot fail with that. Make sure that that's happening first. And then make sure you also have rituals and routines. Make sure that if she's not listening to you, you don't just yell back at her. You kind of figure out why she's not listening to you. We can talk about that more, whatever. But what's really important to understand, like, when was her birthday? We're recording this at the end of October. Like, when was her birthday?
It was August 31st. So it was
Okay. So yeah, August birthday, like me. So she's not, are you?
Yes, August 27th.
Oh, I'm August 6th. So you're not quite a Leo. So we can be friends, but not.
But not really.
Anyway, why I asked is, kids have specific needs that are that develop about one a year for the first 6 years. And I learned this from Neufeld originally, and it's so important to know that when they're your daughter's age, they still tend to be in a place where they really want to feel like they belong, you know? And there's a whole big psychological background for why that is, that when you're about 2.5, you start feeling alone in a different way than you felt before. You start realizing that you are your own person. Like up until 2.5, you don't quite get that you're a separate person. You just kind of think you're part of mommy or you're part of daddy in a way. And they know what you're thinking. So between 2.5 and 3.5, they tend to feel like into how they're an individual for the first time. So one of the greatest things at that age is to really give them a lot of belonging. And what that means is you talk to her about, and I'm sure you and your husband both do this in different ways, but I'm just giving a name to it and like saying it's like super important, is you say, you're my little girl. I'm your mommy. I'm your daddy. We're a family. And maybe you just say that because it's true and it's nice. But to a kid who's realizing that they're a separate being for the first time, it helps them feel not as scared because they get that they can be a separate being, but they also are part of something. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that
like, makes sense. Like you can be you, your partner can be him, but you also are a we, yeah. You know? And that doesn't mean you can't both be individuals, but you can also be a we that is a special thing. That's what your daughter would really appreciate at this age, is really understanding how, even when I'm not with you, we are a thing. We belong to each other. Now, there's also a behavior that comes along with it that's not so great sometimes when they're that age, but it's super important when you understand it because it can tell you something. So at that age, when they're feeling insecure about belonging, when they're not quite sure, you know, of that feeling, which can just happen to anybody, they will get very possessive, you know, and they'll be like, my toy or my friend or my mommy, not you, you know.
Yeah.
And what we do with that is we just go, oh, okay, hey, give her a little bit of a boundary. Hey, honey, we don't talk that way. I'm also daddy's and I'm also yours, and I'm right. But you make a note to yourself. And if her dad sees it, he makes a note to himself. She needs more of that. She needs more hearing how she's our little girl and we're a family and whatever, because that helps cure those feelings of aloneness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. It makes so much sense when I also see my nieces and nephew be a little needy. But for the most part, when my daughter is with her cousins, she already knows that I have a bond with her so strong, she wouldn't do that with me.
Like, oh, right.
Maybe sometimes, you know, yeah. But it does make so much sense because our bond is so powerful. Like, I create that strong bond that she knows.
Absolutely. And that's amazing that you give her that.
And it's crazy because lately she keeps saying, I'm a big girl now, I can do that. So she's labeling herself as like being capable of doing that. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Like, she knows she's so proud of herself. And I'm like, whoa, you are a big girl.
Yeah. And pretty soon it that need expands into another one too, because they have these needs just build up, right? Mm-hmm. And it's important because some of your audience, you know, might be like, oh, but I don't quite have that with my daughter sometimes, who's that age, like my daughter's acting, you know, right?
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that they're bad parents. Yeah. It just means that depending on the child, they just might be feeling that because they're feeling insecure today, or they were at school or daycare and something happened today that made them feel not as like, you know what happens at that age sometimes, just as an example, and please forgive me if I'm going all over the place, but two little girls will be playing a game, and one of them's getting a little frustrated because she's been trying to explain it for 10 minutes to this other little girl. And then finally the other little girl gets it. And then your daughter walks up, or, you know, some, you know, another kid walks up and goes, I want to play. And the first girl goes, no, you can't play with us. Right? It has nothing to do with your child. It was just that they just spent 10 minutes trying to get this together.
Yeah.
And so they don't want you there because they don't want to explain it again. Right? And just in the moment, they're going to be impulsive and say it. Now, your child might come home and be feeling really insecure because of that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does.
And you could be a great mom and you're doing a great job, but your kid can still feel that. And so you just notice it when it happens. It's normal. It's part of human development. But then when they become about 3.5, they want to feel special, which is different, right? Because for a year, I've mostly been, I want you to hold me, which is the first need, physical touch. The second need is I want to be the same as you. It happens like it when they're one or two. I want to be the same as mommy. I want to be the same as daddy. 2.5 to 3.5, it becomes I want to belong and I want to feel loyalty. But 3.5 to 4.5, they start wanting to feel special. Mm-hmm. Now, this doesn't go away. You might want to feel special, Kathy. I want to feel special. It doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. But boy, when you're 3.5, it's big, right? And so you might tell your daughter, and little girls tend to be a little bit out ahead of little boys with this development. They can get there sooner. But when they're 2.5, you might tell them a story about the day they were born or something. And they're like, that's a nice story. I know that was true for my son. I would tell him, you were born in Marin at Marin General, and this happened, and this happened, and there was birds outside. And he's like, that's a good story, Dad. Move it on. Thank you. It's not that he didn't like it. But when he got to be 3.5, it was the best story ever told in the history of mankind. You better tell it to me 5 times in a row, Dad, right? Because in the story, I was communicating how special he was. And when they become about this age, they start really wanting to know they're special. Now, that doesn't mean you say, you're just the most special kid in the world, you know, because that doesn't really resonate. They're like, okay.
Yeah.
But when you tell them something with a gleam in your eye and you're all excited about, oh my God, you're my little girl and you do this and nobody does this as good as you. Yeah. They just get so excited because they just see it in your eyes that it's important to you and they light up themselves. Yeah. But at that age, if they're feeling insecure today, sometimes they go after the competition. So even if your daughter doesn't do it right now, she's an only child right now?
Yes.
Yeah, my child was. Like, I would come home and say hi to my son, and I'd go, I'll be right back. I'm going to go out and play with you, but I need to say hi to mommy. And I'd go over to talk to her. He wouldn't let us talk to each other sometimes. Yeah. It was just like, nah, 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 right? Yeah. And he didn't want us to talk to each other because the attitude is, I don't want her to be special to you. I want to be special to you. Right?
Yeah.
And you just say, hey, no, but then you provide them lots of specialness later. I know I went off on a whole tangent, but you got me thinking about preschoolers.
This is great. I love this because it's giving me insight because yesterday I had friends come over and so they were giving her full attention. And then when we came down to play with them, to join our friends, she was like, no, daddy. Go upstairs, go away. Like, go. And then we're like, what? Excuse me? Like, so rude. And then.
But that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
And
it sounds like you got a girl who's ahead of schedule a little bit, you know, but that's normal. Again, for girls, they tend to do that. It's not all girls, all boys, but it tends to be little girls are a little bit ahead on this. And she just wants to feel special. So when she does that, you just go, okay, honey, mommy, daddy, you're coming downstairs too.
Yeah.
But then you go, let's tell her a really special story about a great thing that happened with us before. She needs to know she's special, but she also needs to know how she's special to mommy and how me and mommy are special and how me and daddy are special. So that there's little secrets and little things that me and mommy have that nobody else has. And there's little things that me and daddy have that nobody else has. And that really makes them happy and fills their cup when they're preschoolers.
I see that. Because it's just a mommy and daughter thing where we just have talks. I don't believe in time out. I used to before I would become a mom. And then I tried it when she was younger. I was like, this is terrible.
Doesn't work. It works at first with some kids, but then it always stops working. But it's not what you're supposed to do. Pediatricians just introduced it to give parents an alternative to spanking. So if it got parents to stop spanking, that's awesome. But it's really not the best thing to do long term. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'm glad that you had that instinct.
Yeah, that's great. Because I still see people who really, truly believe in it because that's what they were taught to. And I was like, if you look at your child or when I look around with the situation, when I see timeout, I'm like, that does not work. Like, your kid's obviously having a tough time. So what I do with my daughter is we just have talks. I just take her to a quiet spot that she could just focus on just me and her. And I just feel her connection and I just hold her and I love her and I tell her I love you. Just try to calm down when she can, you know, just until she regulates her emotions. And then right when she does, she'll be able to tell me exactly what happened, like why she got so upset. And then,
Yeah.
you know, just be really fast. Like it's getting faster when she's able to regulate herself. Sometimes she's not, but she loves it. Like today I was like, you know, she wasn't listening. She wasn't getting herself ready for school. And then I was like, do you want to talk? Like, let's see what's going on. And then she's like, yeah, let's go have a talk, mommy. I was like,
Nice.
yeah, she loved it. She just like wanted to hang out with me, have the one-on-one, maybe because I had, you know, Monday's a busy day and I don't know. So.
Yeah, it's always the transition times are always the biggest, because what's hard to understand sometimes is they might love school and they might love their teacher and they might like their friends
Yes.
a lot. But the way the brain works before they're like 5, 6, 7 years old is they really only focus on one thing at a time. So sometimes they might look like, I don't want daddy, I want mommy, or the other way around. It's not that they don't like daddy. It's that I'm really focused on mommy right now, and my brain can only do one thing at once, right? That's the prefrontal lobe. The prefrontal cortex doesn't grow in until they're like 5, 6, 7 years old. And so they can, if they're feeling really mad, they can usually only feel one thing at a time if they're connected to one person really a lot. But it works the same way. Like they can really like school, but if in the morning, what they're thinking is, I don't want to be away from mommy. I don't want to be away from daddy. That's all they're thinking. They're not thinking, and also, I'm going to go to school and that's great. They're just thinking, I don't want to leave mommy. And so parents tend to have the most problems in the day, right before school, right after school, and right before bed, right?
Yes, you hit it on the nail.
And those are always times where it's a transition. Even if your kid slept in the next room. I've had parents say it to me that they sleep in the same room as their kid, but nighttime still feels like a time of separation for kids because they have to go to sleep and let go. And, you know, it doesn't feel connected to them the same way as maybe we go to sleep going, I love my kids. I love my family. I love my partner. Good night. Sometimes they have this feeling like, I'm going to miss them. They're going to be gone. I'm going to go to sleep, right? It's separation anxiety. So that's why you usually have problems with kids right before school, right after school, when maybe their cup isn't really full because they've been gone, and right before bed because they're facing separation. And so they ask you for 18 cups of water, or they tell you they're still hungry because they just don't want to say goodbye, right? And so what we need to do is we need to train them to look forward to getting back together. We at that age, I learned this from Dr. Neufeld, but at that age, I noticed my son resisting going to bed at some point. His mom did some things on her end. But what I did is I started telling him about what we were going to do in the morning in great detail. I didn't just say, I'll see you in the morning, which can work sometimes. I'd say, do you know what we're going to do tomorrow morning? We're going to make blueberry pancakes. We are? Yeah. And I'm going to put you up on the counter and you're going to help me stir and we'll put those blueberries in. And he knew his mom kind of didn't like that he would eat blueberries that were in the batter because there's like yolk, you know, raw egg in them or something. But she didn't mind that much. She didn't mind if he did, but he would be all mischievous, like, ooh, and I'll dip the blueberries in there. Mommy doesn't like, I might, yeah, but we'll do that. And I just made him really think about how great it was going to be in the morning and how I'd give him a whole bunch of hugs. And he started going to bed easier, right? Now, all kids are different. You have to find their story. You have to find the thing that they look forward to. You have to be consistent and do it. But bridging forward to after school, bridging forward to in the morning, often will lessen those separation anxieties and make behavior better. Because the behavior is usually, I am feeling anxious or I'm don't know how to do something yet. And so we just have to be the ones that are controlling those elements as much as we can until they can do it themselves. But I love how your daughter will say, yes, I want to talk, mom. Let's go. You know, that's great.
Well, yeah, I feel like she very is like the boss and she just knows what she wants. And I love that. sometimes it's tough, but that's so useful and helpful of what you just said, because it makes the transition. And I know so many parents right now, they're just like, literally the mornings, the nighttime routine, I don't know what to do. And, you know, they're always like, why is my kid saying this and that? And it makes so much sense. You just have to bridge that gap to get them excited to do that certain thing. But it is like that, regardless, you should make them excited to change their own clothes or be more independent as well, or if it's not just transition, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's what we're doing is we're literally helping them build neural pathways in their brain. Because when children are born, they don't even know you're coming back in the room when you leave. That's how basic, they call it object permanence in psychology. Your kid could sometimes freak out when you leave the room when they're a baby, because they don't have the part of their brain developed yet that knows you're coming back in. So when you disappear, they're like, she's gone. Mom's gone forever. That's what they feel at first, you know? And by the time you send them off into the world, you want them to kind of know that people are reliable. And if I bring reliable people into my life, they'll be there, and I'm worthy, and I have confidence, and you want all that. But childhood is mostly a journey from that really, really insecure place to that place. And it's not a straight road all the time. It takes a lot. I say it takes a lot of reps of your little girl, in your case, just learning over and over again. When I'm sick, you take care of me. When I'm sad, you take care of me. When I don't know how to do it, you help me figure it out, right? When I feel like I'm too much, you reassure me. And that over time, she just internalizes that more and more. Now, the thing about confident kids, and I hope it doesn't sound like I'm challenging anything you said, because I'm not, but just for the whole audience, including maybe your daughter at different times, the challenging thing can be when they act like they're large and in charge. A lot of times that's not as confident as we think it is. Okay. Okay. It's normal. Yeah. It's totally normal for a kid with great parents at that age, right? And at older ages. But I teach parents that one of the most important things is that you're an alpha parent. Mm-hmm. And alpha doesn't mean you're a dictator. It doesn't mean you're some alpha executive jerk or something.
Yeah.
I work with a lot of executives, and I'm not talking about you guys and women that are executives out there. I work with lots of tech people and founders and heads of law firms and things. But there's this stereotype, right? Like American Psycho or whatever, that yeah, a certain kind of jerk in charge, you know? Mm-hmm. When I say alpha, I mean that you're a big mama bear, or yeah, you're a papa bear, or you're a mother goose, and that your energy is like, you are awesome, child, and I love you, and I love if you're confident, but daddy and I, we're in charge, okay? And that's not to suppress you or to make you feel like you don't have voice, and no, none of that. I don't teach any of that stuff. But children who are sensitive, children in general, if they don't feel you're in the leadership position, and that doesn't mean, again, you're a bad parent. It just means you're tired today, or you're trying to be really nice or whatever. If they don't feel that you're large and in charge and you're the mama bear, you're the papa bear, they will move to be in charge themselves, and they will start bossing you around, or they'll start bossing their siblings around, or they'll start bossing kids. Like, if you left a classroom of, let's say, 4-year-olds or 5-year-olds. Mm-hmm. You are a teacher in a kindergarten classroom. They all could be really well-behaved kids, and they really get along with each other. But if you left the room and went, you and I left the room and we went behind a mirror and we could see the kids and they couldn't see us, mm-hmm, for like 20 minutes, you better believe some stuff's going to go down. And mm-hmm, what's going to happen is, one little girl is going to be like, okay, everyone, this is what we need to do. We're going to do this, right? And a little boy will be like, hell no. You know what we're going to do? We're going to go sneak into the snacks, and we're going to do this. And certain people will follow the girl, and certain people will follow the boy. But it's not because they're natural born leaders necessarily. Okay. I'm not saying that some kids aren't more that way or not. I'm just saying in general, it's because there's no leader here. So because I feel insecure, I'm going to be the leader. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So they're already learning to lead, to try to control.
Right. But there's leadership that's real leadership.
Yeah.
That I want to lead my team. I want to lead my family. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But then there's another leadership that's because there's no leader, I'm going to pretend to be a leader because there's no leader. And that's not the same, right? Yeah. I often joke with people. I've been on a couple board of directors, right? For like nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
I was on one once. Do you know, you're in San Jose, right? Yeah, you're from my hometown. We talked about that last time you and I talked, that I'm from Almaden Valley, 408, represent. In Marin County, I love Marin County, you know, a lot of founders and tech people there commuting into the city. That's where I got my start.
Mm.
And I used to joke that in Fairfax, where I used to live, it's very Marin, I love it. Again, I love it. But everybody wants everybody to be happy sometimes, and we're all going to get along and we're all going to consider everybody's opinion, right? Now, in general, as a person, I'm with you. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's respect each other. Let's hear each other's opinions. But I'd be at these meetings sometimes and we'd have five things to do, mm-hmm. and we'd get to the first thing and it was 11 or a 7-1 vote. And only one person didn't want the thing. And the rest of us were like, no, that's obvious. Let's do it. And then we'd spend an hour talking about that person's opinion instead of moving on to the other things. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Now, I'm not bragging about this.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that in that situation where everybody's trying to be, everybody has to be okay, I will stand up. Again, I'm not proud of this. I will stand up and go, okay, guys, come on, come on, come on, come on. Kathy, your opinion matters. Totally, but it's 7-1. We need to move on.
Yeah.
Now, that's not because I want to be a leader. It's because nobody's being a leader right now.
Mm.
And so I'm going to try to be a leader, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does.
Now, if I would do that, I'm just saying that's the same thing preschoolers do. It's mm-hmm. the same thing kids do sometimes, is sometimes people are trying too hard to be gentle parents. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's big controversy on the internet right now.
Yes.
Everybody's about gentle parenting for a few years, but a lot of people are like, that means never saying no to my child. And that's not what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Be loving, be kind, but you also have to have limits, right?
Yeah.
But if you're just trying to be gentle all the time, or you're trying to be your child's best friend and they're sensitive, they will start bossing you around. And I'm just saying that's not confidence. That's a child in the moment that's feeling insecure because nobody's driving the car. So they feel they have to drive the car. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. Yeah, because if you're creating that environment for them. So obviously, if they don't feel that authority or whatever the energy is, right, they're going to take on that role because someone always has to lead. There's some, not in a bad way, but there's always some type of leader.
Yeah. Again, not be a dictator, be a leader. And that they need that because they just need to be kids. They need to play and explore and figure things out, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And so that's why, like, it happens a lot with older kids. And it's part of the conversations I'm having with my clients all the time now that led to the book. There I am, the guy who just dropped a reference to his book. I'm that obvious. Because I've more and more for the last few years been hearing from parents. My kids are obsessed with screens. My kids are just obsessed with what other kids are doing. My kids are obsessed with social media. My kids now, I'm hearing from more and more parents. They're going to ChatGPT to get advice instead of asking me. Mm-hmm. And this is another example of what I'm talking about. So I was just talking more like from a preschooler.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, do you know the book or the movie Lord of the Flies?
Yes. We had to read that growing up.
Yeah. So did we at Castellero Junior High. And if you know where Castellero is, I think it was at Castellero. I think Castellero Middle School now. But the point of the book, I think, is just so much more relevant these days, that you had these kids that were at a proper school and had teachers and parents and, you know, that were in charge. But then the adults were gone and they were on the island by themselves. And so they started organizing in little groups and in cliques, and some of them were trying to be good and some of them were, we're going to go kill things, right? But that's what happens when there's no leadership. And I think sometimes these days as parents, what I see and what my clients often struggle with is they're so busy doing a lot of things and their kids are busy doing a lot of things, but sometimes there's a vacuum left where the leadership is supposed to be. And that vacuum gets filled. Does that make sense how I'm saying vacuum? Because I know some people can see my hands, what I'm doing, and some people are just listening. But I'm saying one hand is above the other, and the hand on top is like the leader. And when the leader's not there, it leaves space for other things to fill it in. That makes sense?
Yeah.
And so that's one of the main concerns I see with my clientele, is their kids are turning to each other a lot more, or they're turning to screens a lot more. And I'm not here to say tech is bad. I grew up where you grew up. I grew up, like, my next door neighbor was an Apple programmer, when the only computer, I know I'm much older than you, but was an Apple II, and, you know, and Atari computers and Commodore VIC-20s. I'm really aging myself. Everybody in your audience is like, what are you talking about, dude? But, like, I grew up in Silicon Valley. I was on a documentary about kids in America being into computers when I was like 12 years old, that was on the BBC. I wasn't that good. My neighbor just happened to be a PR person for a computer company. But anyway, I'm not anti-technology. I'm just saying we have to be aware as parents that if we leave too much of a void, our kids will fill that void with something else. And when they do that, we have a lot less power and we have a lot less ability to parent them, you know? Yeah. And it's just a thing that we all have to be aware of.
So how do you, like, bridge that gap? Doing it earlier than later, of like...
Part of it is so philosophical. Yeah, of course, the sooner you can build these bonds like you're doing with your daughter and just maintaining them, it's just... I find that a lot of my clients, which are the kind of people that listen to your show, the kind of people in San Jose, kind of people in San Francisco, Marin County, and people who are listening like all over the place, it's they're good people trying to do good, but sometimes we're too susceptible to trends and things that everybody else is doing. Like, I have people come into my office, my virtual office these days, and been telling me for years, like, my kid's totally addicted to social media and screens. What do I do about it? Yeah. You know? Yeah. And so there's a certain philosophical thing that I just try to establish with parents. You are the answer for your kids, not me, not a parenting author, not a psychologist. You are the answer for your kids. And you are meant to raise them, not your peer culture, not your friend, not their friends. Okay. Yeah. Now, I want my kid to have friends. My kid had amazing friends growing up, right? We had amazing people in our life at my kid's school, great families, but we all kind of agreed on certain things. And one of them was our kids didn't do screens at all until they were like in eighth grade, you know? Okay. Now, am I saying that's right for everybody? No, I'm not. But you know what? They didn't care. I'm just making a point that they didn't really care. And what they did was they played outside.
Yeah.
And they played with each other. So the point of that is not some kind of rule I'm trying to give you that none of your kids should have screens. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, be aware that sometimes we leave too much of an opening. And if we stay large and in charge ourselves, which seems to be my phrase of the day, I'm saying it a lot. If we stay in that alpha position and we do things according to what we know is right for our kids, and we put the first thing as being taking care of our kids, and we build a culture around them and we don't give them up. Like a lot of parents, the second their kid turns 13, they're like, okay, I guess they're talking back now. I should kind of lay off and let them just hang out with each other. No, they need you more than ever when they're a teenager. Sure, they need you to let them have a little bit more say and a little bit more freedom and a little bit more ability to think for themselves. Yes, of course. But they still need you. And I guess my bottom line answer to that, Kathy, is like, just don't give up your job. Make sure, just the way you have your three-year-old now, and it's so obvious to you, this is my little girl, and this is my kid, and yes, same about her dad. Don't give up that feeling. Just adjust how you do it a little bit as they get a little bit older. Does that kind of answer your question?
That's super helpful. That's amazing and great advice, because I've always believed that every kid is different and every parent knows the best for their child. There's no one right way to do it. And I love the suggestion of figuring out the gap and leading, being the alpha and not overstepping, allowing them, but knowing when that happens. And I guess, yeah, I can definitely be better at that, because I see where sometimes I want to do the gentle parenting. Not obviously it's not working, but then instead of gentle parenting at that moment in time, I'm going to notice like, okay, she's leading because we're not leading. Like, for example, I'm sure a lot of parents right now, right? Like, we're guilty of being on our phones and then our kids are playing by themselves. And so in order for my daughter to get my husband and I's like attention, she will lead and be like, hey, don't do that, or blah, blah, blah. Like, come listen to me. And I, you know, come play with me. And I see that now, because it's like, we're disconnected from her. So she's like, hello, excuse me, right? A lot of people do this though. And but, then,
yeah, exactly. And the important thing, again, for you, because I hear you saying it this way, but other people listening to you, the point is never that if your kid's doing that, you're screwing up. That's not the point. Mm-hmm. The point is a kid will have the tendency to do that when they're that age, because at any given time, they can feel insecure. At any given time, if you leave a three-year-old alone for 10 minutes, they could be totally fine. Yeah. And then 10 minutes later, their cup feels empty. You know what I mean by cup? Like, yeah, if they have a cup and you're giving them lots of attention, their cup feels full. And when they're that age, they're like, I'm going to go play. And they take off, right? But then it kind of goes down again because they're little and it doesn't stay up all the time, you know, the cup level. Yeah. And so if she had a little sister and say your daughter was 5 and her little sister was 3, if you left them alone for like, and this goes to some of your audience who has this kind of situation, if you left them alone for like 20 minutes and you're like, oh, look, they play so well together, I guarantee you at some point, 20 minutes later, 30 minutes later, when you're leaving them alone, the older one usually is going to start bossing the little one around, yeah, right? And then the little one's going to be like, you're not the boss of me, mm-hmm, you know? And then they'll fight and they'll have sibling rivalry. But the thing that made that happen was not that your 5-year-old is a jerk. It's that your 5-year-old just felt that absence. Mm-hmm. And so they stepped into it. But then your other kid was like, no, that's not your job to step into it. That's mommy's job. That's daddy's job. So they don't go along with it. And then they fight. I'm telling you, thousands of times I've heard this situation, right? And so I tell those parents, hey, they're young. Get over this whole thing that maybe they have to work it out or whatever. Like, no, when they're that age, you just don't leave them alone for 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean you helicopter parent or never leave their side. It just means if you realize that that happens every time after 20 minutes or 30 minutes, just do a flyby. Yeah. 20 minutes into it, you come in and you go, hi, kid number one. What are you doing? You play so well with your little sister. How are you doing, kid number two? Isn't your big sister a great big sit? You guys are great. I just wanted to say hi. I love you so much. We're going to go to the park in a little bit. You just reset the clock. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. You just filled the gap. Mm-hmm. But that's how it works. The gap starts being perceived. The younger they are, the faster it happens. The older they get, the less it can happen. But when they're teenagers, you don't leave the gap then either. You stay in a good position. You stay the mama bear, the papa bear. you just, again, you give them the ability to feel like they have more choice and some more, you know, stuff and more responsibilities, but you still stay in that position. Because if you allow them to make their peers number one, you're going to have a Lord of the Flies situation where they, I have parents come in all the time, and you don't have a teenager, but they'll say, my 13-year-old girl was a great student up until now. And now this year, she's getting D's. And every time I do this, like it's a magic trick, you know, I explain it to them after, but I act like they think I'm like a genius, right? I go, so tell me about your daughter's new friends. And they go, how'd you know she had new friends? It's because I know that's what happened. She made new friends. The friends get D's. She wants to be like her friends. So she's getting D's now. So she is part of the group. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. She wants to fit in.
I explain to them the attachment science behind that so they don't just think I'm a psychic. But every single time, that's what it is, right? And so that's why it's really, really important that your kids should have friends, but you should be number one and you should stay the leader. And that's why everything I do is about trying to teach parents, not just how to learn some tricks to memorize, but to learn to be a leader for their kids.
I love that so much. Thank you so much for your knowledge, for sharing all of your amazing tips, greatness. Like, this is so helpful. Now you're making me become a better mom, and for all the listeners too, to become a better parent of your.
I hope something I said might have given you a little bit of inspiration or something you might think a little bit differently or see a little differently. I find the people that listen to a podcast like this or people who come to me, they're not bad parents. They're trying. And when they're doing things the way they were told, they're just noticing that things don't work sometimes and it doesn't line up, right? So what I try to do is I try to speak things that line up with people's kind of inner knowledge already, I think, right? That there's part of you that goes, I don't feel good about the timeout, so I'm not going to do them anymore, right? Mm-hmm. I don't feel good about yelling at my kid. I know that's not right. Maybe my parent yelled at me and I didn't like it. Okay, I need to figure out a way to not do that, right? That's more real. That's more human. It's not about being some perfect super parent. That doesn't exist, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It's finding the right way that makes you happy to do that and to see your child be happy as well, whatever makes it work, right? Like,
yeah.
And there's so many different ways to do it. And that's going to be so amazing to get your book because it's going to have all this information, I'm sure. Or even
did I send it to you already?
No, you did not.
Okay, I'll send it. I'll send you the PDF right now because it's not released yet as of the time we're talking.
Yes.
But I like it. Here's a fake one. This one's fake. The Common Connected Parent. It was something that people told me to do for 20 years. I'm like, I don't think I have exactly what I want to say yet. I don't know what I will say that's different than my mentor or all the amazing people that I've worked with and trained with. But at some point, I just went, okay, I've also learned from about 2,200 clients. Every single client, I've like learned something. It helped me as a dad. It helped me as a psychotherapist with my psychotherapy clients. It helped me as a parenting coach. And I think what I say in the book is like, parenting has always been hard. It's not like it's always been like some cakewalk. And helping raise children who grow into their greatest potential has always been a challenge. It's just right now, I think there's some unique things happening that are happening so fast.
Yeah.
In a way that we're not used to, right? It used to be the telephone was invented and we had decades to get used to it, right? Yeah. And that was a thing. That changed everything, right? Yeah. You didn't have to go walk to talk to somebody or wait 3 months or send a letter. You could actually pick up the phone. That changed everything about relationships and where people lived and everything. And then we got the computer. And boy, was that very basic at first in those early San Jose days, you know? Very basic. I'm doing a game. I walk up to a bridge and I come up to a troll. What do? Hit him. No, you can't hit him. Ask him for something, right? That was when I was 13. That's how it worked. And it advanced so fast. But now social media and AI and smartphones, you know, Jonathan Haidt wrote his book last year, The Anxious Generation, that was just pointing out that anxiety was going through the roof in kids, depression was going through the roof, self-harm. And so I just finally felt like, okay, I think I know what I want to say to people. I want to create a book that helps create the state in you that you become more calm, you become more connected, and you adopt a better story that helps you be the parent that you want to be and that your kid needs for you to be. And so I kind of found a hero's journey kind of different way of doing it that finally made sense to me. So I'm excited. It's finally going to be birthed to the world soon. And I'm hoping at least 5 people buy it.
Definitely. I'm so excited to read it. I'm so excited to actually learn more in depth about the tips and tools that you'll have in there.
Absolutely.
So, again, for today, I was so honored to have you here.
I loved, you know, again, San Jose, we got to represent, we got to stick together. Yes. South Bay.
Yes. I love it so much.
The first time we talked, I think you were out on a walk somewhere. I'm like, where are you? And you're in San Jose. I'm like, sister. Okay, here we go.
Oh, we're going to have to meet up in person. There's like,
yeah.
We'll get know, the, it's too the... coincidental and so close that we cannot not.
Yeah. I'm just up here in Sonoma County. So just a little bit away. We both got San Francisco right in between us. So.
Exactly. So that's going to be fun. But thank you again for all of your knowledge. And where can people buy the books or learn more about you if they want to know your work? Or
the best thing is just transformativeparenting.com. You know, look me up, Todd Sarner, transformativeparenting.com. I've never been great at the socials. I've always been busy and just old. And so we have like 10,000 people, I think, on our Facebook, but I'm kind of slow with some of the other things. I have a great social media person now, so you'll probably see some more Instagram and things like this. I like my YouTube channel. I started it when I was living in Japan, and I made a whole bunch of videos just on the most common things that people asked me. So Transformative Parenting with Todd. But the book will be available on Amazon November 18th, 2025. So look for it. Give it a review if you like it.
Yes. Awesome. All right. And I'll put all of that.
Look at me. I become a book salesman. I never thought I'd be a book salesman, but I am.
You're not selling. You're just giving.
If you can't tell, I know you can, but I just love this stuff. I love talking about this job of raising kids. You know, when I hear about your daughter, I'm just like, yay, you know, it's going to be another good kid out there in the world, you know? And that's just, there's no better work than that. I was just with my fiance's family down in Jamaica about a month ago. I know we're saying goodbye, but there was all these young teenagers and kids in their early 20s. And I was just looking around and going, these are great kids or great young people now, you know? And that's such great work to be a parent or to be somebody like me who gets to work with parents, that it's a hard job sometimes, but your job is to put great kids out there that they're the greatest version of themselves that they can be. And that's just, I can't think of anything better than that.
And I know that's what I love about you. And that's what I truly believe. And that's your mission to do that and help the world, the whole collective to do that. That's amazing. And that's why we got connected. And that's why you're here.
I'm glad we talked, and let's talk again sometime. But yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for spending this time with me on Ignite Your Power with Kathy Mao podcast. If today's episode resonated with you, take a deep breath and know this, you're exactly where you're meant to be. If you're feeling called to go deeper, I'd love to support you. You can work with me one-on-one or book a numerology guidance card reading with me. All are in the show links below. And if this episode supported you in any way, please share with someone who needs it, leave a review, or take a screenshot and tag me on social media. Your support helps this message reach more souls who are ready to step into their power. Until next time, keep choosing yourself, keep trusting your journey, and keep living your bliss-soft life. I'll see you in the next episode. Bye!